hello and welcome back to Literally Can't Even.
Yes, woo. Woo.
So today we are talking about a book called Sorrowland, which I think I said the author's name last time when I was saying, like, yeah, next time we're reading.
I think it's,
so I feel bad about that.
Rivers Solomon, right?
Mm-hmm, Rivers Solomon. I think I said Raven.
Oh. So,
sorry. Sorry about that, but yeah, it's by Rivers Solomon. It was very interesting.
Very, very interesting. It had been a while since I, like, actually picked up a fantasy book. I feel like last time, what I was pitched was, like, a sci-fi gothic horror, which I kind of get the sci-fi a little bit, but I don't get the gothic horror much, honestly. Mm-hmm.
I do think it was sci-fi.
Yeah.
For sure. Maybe the cult stuff is, like, the horror stuff?
Probably. I don't know where somebody drew, like, gothic anywhere, though, because where's the mansion, you know?
Where's the mansion? Just a little cabin in the woods.
Right. I think Lily is going to read the blurb. I am sure our non-spoiler thoughts will be pretty quick with this, because there's a lot of spoilers to talk about, honestly.
Yes. Yes. And there are a lot of, like, so there are, three parts?
Yeah.
And there's, like, spoilers for each part, and each part is, like, a little, pretty different from each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty interesting. So, anyway. So, Sorrowland, the blurb says, Vern, 7 months pregnant and desperate to escape the strict religious compound where she was raised, flees for the shelter of the woods. There, she gives birth to twins and plans to raise them far from the influence of the outside world. But even in the forest, Vern is a haunted woman. Vern is a hunted woman. Forced to fight back against the community that refuses to let her go, she unleashes incredible brutality far beyond what a person should be capable of, her body racked by inexplicable and uncanny changes. To understand her metamorphosis and to protect her small family, Vern has to face the past and, more troublingly, the future outside the woods. Finding the truth will mean uncovering not only the secrets of the compound she fled, but also the violent history of America that produced it. River Solomon's Sorrowland is a genre-bending work of gothic fiction. Here, monsters aren't just individuals, but entire nations. This is a searing, seminal book that marks the arrival of a bold, unignorable voice in American fiction.
There we go.
There we go. So I guess gothic horror comes from the blurb.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that blurb didn't really tell much about this book, especially in terms of, like, the other characters in it.
Right, yeah, for sure. It does not at all.
So, where should we begin with this? I guess, star rating, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like I should have taken notes with this book, honestly.
Yeah.
But I did not, so. Going off page with this one. So I ended up giving it 4.5 stars. I've really enjoyed it. The only reason I didn't give it 5 stars is because the second part of this book really drags. Like, it dragged so much, and it got, like, almost boring. But part 1 and part 3 definitely made up for, you know, all the lost time.
Yeah, I was going to say 4.5 stars, too, because I really loved the characters. The plot was really interesting. I feel like there are a couple of elements that they just didn't, like, they explained so much, but then at the same time, there are a couple elements that they really didn't explain or explore.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, it's very much a standalone book. And I think that that is fine, but the ending leaves a lot just kind of, like, out there.
Yeah, and when we get to that, let me tell you, the ending of this book was one of my least favorite tropes ever. Mm-hmm. it made me mad, but I had enjoyed, like, the rest of part 3 so much that, like, I could forgive it for that.
Sure.
Vern.
Vern is very interesting. So I will say I assumed that it would be, like, I thought that more of it would be her preparing for her children, because it says in the blurb that she's 7 months pregnant, but it starts with her in labor.
Yes. So that's actually the first scene in the book, is her just, like, giving birth to these two kids. I don't know why, why the blurb didn't mention the names of the kids. Like, it's not a spoiler or anything, but their names are Feral and Howling. Mm-hmm. Which I think is honestly kind of interesting, given the context. You know, they're being born in the middle of a forest. So, that was definitely a big plus for me. Like, it kind of kicked it off the ground really well.
Right. And they don't spend a lot of time, like, saying this, but, like, Vern thinks that she's just having one baby, mm-hmm. and then she has two, and, like, she really doesn't seem that shocked or anything, which, I mean, it's fine, like, whatever, but I found that crazy, because I can only imagine, like, you would be floored, just, like, absolutely, like, what in the world?
Yeah. Well, like, and it's a while after, too, that the second one comes out, you know?
Uh-huh. I think that, like, I don't know how normal that is, honestly. I don't know. But she doesn't spend a lot of time being like, oh, no, something's wrong. Like, I'm going to die because now I'm having all this pain, even though I'm supposed to be done. But she's just, like, rolling with it. So, yeah, she has two babies. And she kind of makes a big deal about not, like, assigning them genders. Like, she refers to them both as he throughout the book, but doesn't actually, like, know.
Mm-hmm.
She just, like, decides that she's not going to, which, I mean, you know, cool. And at one point someone asks, like, if they're a boy or a girl or something, and she says they're children, which I thought was kind of interesting. So that's kind of like a, you know, that's just a little thing in there. She refers to them as he, but they're, I guess, neither, both,
right,
whatever.
Yeah.
And then she just kind of, like, raises them in the woods for several years for the first part of the book.
Yeah. Whenever Vern does give birth to these children, she's actually only 15, which I think is just absolutely insane.
crazy.
That a 15-year-old, I mean, given she grew up in this cult, so, like, she doesn't know the outside world at all. Even though, you know, I don't know, she's a teenager, so I feel like, I can't talk about this without spoilers, because, like, there's a spoiler for part two, but is it a spoiler, because, you know, it's 100 pages in, but let's just say the instincts that you would have to survive in the forest, you really have to suspend your belief a little bit.
Yeah, and they kind of explain it by saying, like, her cult is called Caneland, and they apparently made a big deal about, like, being able to identify plants and live off the land and stuff, but it's very much still a civilization.
Yeah.
And so to go from that to, like, completely living on your own in the woods and caring for two people is, it's a little far-fetched.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, they do a lot of explaining of the things that she does, which I thought is pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, that was actually one of my favorite parts of the book, was when they were in the woods, because honestly, I thought the entire book was going to be that.
Yeah.
But it does go another route, which, you know, we'll talk about with spoilers, but I really enjoyed just, like, the survival game that the three characters had to, you know, do and live, I guess.
Yeah. And so when Vern is in the woods, like we said, it starts with her being in labor, but it's clear that she's been in the woods for a little while by herself, maybe a few weeks. And there's somebody called the Fiend who is following her, presumably after her, but he's leaving, like, he's killing animals and, like, dressing them up in baby clothes to, like, scare her, which is, you know, terrifying. And then that continues to happen after she has her babies, and she's just kind of, like, trying to stay on the move and not let this person find her. And then at some point she leaves the woods. So she, like, her babies are sleeping. She leaves them. She ends up finding, like, a bar. Mm-hmm. And she just kind of, like, wanders in and tries to call her mother and talks to her mother for, like, a second. And the conversation is really upsetting. So she ends up, like, leaving with this woman that she meets and, like, having a relationship with her for a couple of years, it sounds like.
Well, see, that's why... So I wasn't really... it's not really a spoiler that she does venture into the outside world a little bit, like beyond the forest. Mm-hmm. But what I was kind of shocked by was the timing. Like, that this was all taking place in the modern world. And so, mm-hmm. like, with her raising these children in a forest, but then very easily, like, it's in one night, basically. Whenever she first finds this bar, she's very easily able to walk to a bar. You know? Mm-hmm. So it's just weird that she would be able to live in this forest for years and not be found by anyone.
Right. That it's, like, so close, but yet so secluded.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they do kind of say that it's, like, a middle of nowhere bar, but yeah, how, like, very convenient.
Yeah.
yeah. And then I guess, you know, throughout she is experiencing what she calls hauntings. Yes. And she says that when she was in the cult, she, you know, they would be given vitamins and stuff. And she suspects that it caused them to all have night terrors. So they all had really vivid, terrifying dreams. And she's finding that she is having those awake. So she is, like, seeing things that aren't real, imagining things. On the night that she's giving birth, she thinks she hears wolves, even though there aren't wolves in the woods that she is in. And she sees, like, a dead child at one point that, you know, isn't there eventually. You know, she thinks it's there and she tries to rescue him until she realizes that he's dead. And then she does find out that, you know, he's not real. And just a few things like that that's kind of like, oh, you know, that's weird. But, you know, aren't really. She doesn't know why they're happening. And they're just kind of like a way. Right. Something that happens to her, basically. And her children can't see them as they get older.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's actually something that I really liked that the author did. They pretty much just gave you all the information that you needed to know about the cult in the beginning. A big part of part one, I would say probably like the first 50 pages, is really just dwelling on Vern's time in the cult. And so from there on, like, it does feel a little bit info dumpy, but I think it helps set up the rest of the book a lot better, I guess, because it does get referenced so much considering the other characters she does meet or try to reach out to.
Yeah, and I think it is a little info dumpy, like you said, but I think it's in a good place because, you know, she's got these babies that are super young and, you know, they're sleeping a lot and she's kind of just, like, by herself a lot. Yeah. Whereas as they get older, she's with them a lot and then she encounters other people and there's, like, there's less time inside of her head.
Well, especially you know, after part one, it does very much become, like, a road trip book almost. And so you need that space for all that plot, I guess. And so, you know, I'm happy I got developed in a part of the book where, like, again, not much is happening. You know, they're just in the woods.
Right.
Chilling.
But it's not boring. No, like that. No. Part one is very interesting, I think. So I was going to say a little bit about the cult. So, like I said, it's called Caneland and it was founded by some... I think she says Black Panthers, who kind of branch off and make their own, they call it CLAW, their own, like, organization where basically they want to live away from the world of the white man. They don't want to patronize them in any way. They don't want to be with them in any way. They want to live separately. And so their, like, philosophy is that they're descended from Cain and that the god of Cain is, like, the right and true god, and, you know, it's all kind of an interesting philosophy that they've created for themselves. And so they don't, you know, they don't buy anything that's made by, you know, the white man. They don't live in the white man's society. They do their own thing. They teach their own children, and they are completely secluded from the outside world. And in very culty fashion, Vern is married very young to the leader.
Yeah.
hence the being pregnant at 15.
Yes. Reverend Sherman is the father of the twins.
and Vern, another thing that I liked that she did is that she never talks about Reverend Sherman to her children. Mm-hmm. She actually tells them that their father was her best friend, Lucy.
Yeah.
Who left the compound before Vern did. And she just kind of makes a decision that she never wants to tell the twins about their father. So she just says that, you know, their father is Lucy and tells them about Lucy when they ask, so that he doesn't have that hold over her.
Yeah.
She also has a mother and a brother who live on the compound who she left behind. They mention a few times that her mom, like, has a drinking problem. And, you know, she loves her little brother a lot. He's very bright. But she just got the opportunity to leave and left. And they don't actually tell you how she left until quite a ways into the book.
Yeah, it's pretty far into the book.
So as far as, like, they kind of allude to the transformation that she's going through in the in the book. So as far as part one is concerned, she has the hauntings. She has some quick moments where she seems to be very strong. Like, she throws something really far or, you know, breaks something, but it's nothing crazy. It doesn't really stick out to her. You know, she's not exactly interacting with people in a way that she can compare herself to them.
Right.
The only relationship she has outside of her children is with the woman that she met at the bar. You know, they kind of hook up every now and then, but they don't really have a relationship.
But that's kind of the bridge from part one to part two, is this transformation. Mm-hmm. Vern starts to fear is more like cancer. And so she's afraid she's going to die because of some of the things that they did on the compound in the cult. And so once the transformation starts to get almost infected looking, that's whenever she kind of...
It's like on her back.
Yeah. So that's whenever she, like, finally draws the line and decides they need to leave the forest. And, yeah, that's kind of the end of part one.
Well,
okay, there's something else, but...
Yeah.
As far as non-spoilers go, that's the beginning.
Right. I was trying to find the woman's name that she has...
I think it's Ollie.
The sort of relationship with... Yeah, it's Ollie. I just found it. So do you want to talk about part two without spoilers? Can we talk about part two without spoilers?
I think because part two takes such a different turn almost.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably leave it at that for the non-spoilers.
Sure.
But if any of that sounded interesting, go for it. It's a really good book. It was very well written.
It's a good book. It's going to be worth reading whether you stay to the end or not.
Yeah.
Because a lot of stuff happens. But there's definitely a lot of stuff that we don't want to spoil for you. So.
Yeah. And the writing is very beautiful. Like, almost poetic. Very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But also, so being inside of Vern's head is really, I enjoyed it a lot. She's very blunt. She doesn't like the way that she grew up. She doesn't like being told what to do or who she has to be. I totally didn't mention this, but Vern is albino.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's not a huge part of the book. It's interesting. One of her twins is albino. So Farrell is also albino like she is. And something that I didn't realize is albinos have or I don't know if they all do, if it's just, like, it makes you more likely. But basically, Vern and also her child, Farrell, have, bad eyesight. Like, they have nystagmus, so their eyes are, like, wobbly, and they have a hard time, like, focusing on things and, you know, very nearsighted. My dogs are, like, going crazy. I'm so sorry. And so as a result of that, Vern never learned how to read because it was very hard for her to focus on the words and, you know, give her headaches. And in Caneland, it's not really imperative for women to read. So, you know, they just never bothered. And, you know, that doesn't affect her much in the forest, but it starts to affect her more as she ventures out.
And I think that that part about her being albino definitely sets her apart just from her cult in general. Because she probably...
Mm-hmm, because they're...
They're very much against the white man, and because,
right,
you know, she doesn't have pigment in her skin, she definitely sticks out like a sore thumb, you know?
Exactly. And so, like, she doesn't... So the adults have issues with her because she's outspoken, and, you know, of course, she's a woman. She should be soft-spoken and obedient. You know, they're very religious in that aspect, but also, you know, the kids are cruel and mean to her. And, you know, Lucy is her only friend, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she sees herself in Farrell, her younger child, too. And so they kind of have that, you know, a different relationship than she has with her other child. Not, you know, not because she has favorites, but just because she sort of relates to Farrell.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I have any other non-spoiler.
I was going to say, so with all of that, I think we want to launch into spoilers, because that kind of brings forward the rest of the book.
Yes.
So do you want to talk about the incident with Ollie?
Yeah.
That kind of happens at the end of part one?
Yeah, when you find out Ollie is the fiend, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually surprised that got brought up so quickly. I thought that was going to be like a big plot twist at the end, but... you know, I didn't see it coming whatsoever, considering, you know, the fiend and Ollie were introduced, like, back to back.
Yeah.
You know? So,
I didn't see it coming either. I definitely, Vern mentions the first time she goes to Ollie's apartment, which is not, the first night that they meet, wasn't it? Or maybe the second time that they meet?
I think it was the second time. I think the first time she just used the phone.
Maybe. Okay. Oh, no, she just takes her, like, on a ride.
Oh, right.
Because Ollie has a motorcycle. So she goes to the apartment, and Vern mentions that, you know, it's sparsely decorated. It's very neat and tidy. There's not a lot of stuff. And, you know, in my mind, I was like, oh, I wonder if she is living a double life. Maybe she, you know, is in a relationship with someone else, and this is, like, her side apartment. Or maybe she just works a lot, travels for work.
See, that's what I thought. I was just like, oh, she's on the road a lot.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so for, you know, after years of this relationship, Vern is in the apartment and she goes looking. I think they get into a fight. They're like angry at each other. And Vern, for some reason, is looking for a blanket, and she opens a closet to find just like a closet full of baby clothes with like tags still on them. And so that immediately like lets her know this is, you know, the fiend who's been torturing me
this
whole time. And so they get into this whole like physical fight where Ollie is like telling her that she cares about her and, you know, just listen to me. And Ollie's like trying to beat the crap out of her. And because Vern is so strong, you know, she gets a couple real good punches in.
Yeah. But then, you know, Vern gets away, and, you know, because Ollie wanted her to go back to Caneland, she's like, we gotta go somewhere far. So, you know, once she finishes beating up Ollie, she takes the two twins, and they set out to try and find Lucy.
Yeah. So Vern mentions in the beginning, when the fiend is introduced, that she suspects that it's someone that Sherman is paying to... like find her, and I don't know if at that point they have a conversation about it, but it's just kind of understood that Ollie was supposed to bring her back. And Ollie says that she was trying to scare her in the beginning, but then she chose not to like report on her, so she just kind of had been stalling for her for all these years, and she thinks that that's gonna like endear Vern to her, but it does not. And so Vern takes her babies in. Kind of hitchhikes her way to her friend Lucy's aunt's house.
Yes. So that is the part of the book that started to put me to sleep. I really don't like road trip books because I just feel like every altercation that the main character may come across, like, isn't going to matter at the end. And I would mm-hmm. say for a large part of part two, that is true.
Sure.
Yeah, she ends up at the destination she needed to get to. But I think the author was trying to show how it is for the twins to really encounter the real world for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, I wanted something a little, I don't know, a little bit more grand in part two.
Sure. Yeah, so they, like I said, they just kind of hitchhike. They steal some money, you know, ride a bus or two, that kind of thing. Along the way, it does mention that Vern is starting to have, a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, her body is really achy. Whatever is happening to her is, like, spreading and, like, changing her more. She's, like, seeing the hauntings out in the world.
Yeah, they're becoming, like, a lot more recurring.
Uh-huh.
As she starts to venture farther and farther.
And she will kind of see, like, what she kind of, it's almost like she's seeing ghosts, but she's not really seeing ghosts.
Yeah.
You know,
there is one moment in part two that actually almost made me cry. Because I had just read in June the book Giovanni's Room by James uh-huh. Baldwin, which, let me tell you, that book is referenced like crazy in this book. Like, yes. It is mentioned at least 20 times, I would say.
Yes, because Lucy, like, smuggled it into Caneland and then would read it to Vern when they were kids.
Right.
And Vern, like, basically memorized the whole thing.
Yeah, so I think this was once they arrived at Bridget's place, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are, she's, like, reading it to the twins, but Vern can't read. So I think it's either Bridget or Gogo reading the actual version of the book, but, like, Vern is, like, it's, like, memorized for her. So she's, like, saying it out loud, the beginning of the book, and, like, across the room she sees Lucy as a haunting, and it's just, like, I don't know. That scene really got to me.
Yeah, that part's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this whole time, Vern thinks that she's gonna get to this auntie's place and find Lucy there, because Lucy always said that that's where she was gonna go. And so this, you know, it's kind of like a double, like, she's gonna hopefully find safety here, but also she's finally gonna find Lucy, and, you know, figure out what happened to her.
Yeah. I don't think it's until, like, part three that you find out what actually happened to Lucy, right?
No, I don't think it is. It's, yeah, it's pretty far. So, basically, like you said, I don't think really anything happens on the road trip besides the fact that, you know, the twins are kind of getting acclimated to the world. She doesn't want to force them to behave the way that, you know, society expects them to. So she kind of wants to keep them wild, if you will. She does at one point see, like, a creature in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
She assumes that it's a haunting. It's like this big, bony, terrifying creature with, like, wing-like things coming out of its back, and it speaks to Vern. And it's, like, crazy scary. And then they end up at this, basically, restaurant that's called, like, Auntie's Place or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And it's like a pay what you can, like, soup kitchen slash restaurant place, and Fern is kind of crushed that it wasn't, you know, a house or, like, a safe house. But there she finds Bridget, who actually was the person that Lucy was talking about.
Yeah. And then you know, okay, so I read this book like 3 or 4 weeks ago now, but I'm like blanking on what happened at the end of part two. Like, I know she gets to the motel at some point, but there's, like, some occurrence that happens that forces her to run. Is it just the haunting?
I have it right here. Okay. Let me look.
Also, just for people who haven't read this book, she does start to develop a relationship with this woman named Gogo, mm-hmm. while she is staying at Bridget's place. And, you know, it's an okay relationship. I don't know how you felt about it, but it never really felt that compelling to me. I feel like it could have maybe gone a little farther, especially in part three.
I think it could have. I did like them together. So basically, Bridget is the auntie, like I said, and she takes, you know, she figures out that Vern knew Lucy and, you know, is from Caneland and needs help. And so Bridget takes them in. And then shortly thereafter, you meet Gogo, who is Bridget's adoptive daughter. There, Bridget and Gogo are both Lakota Native American. And Gogo is like a healer, she's like an actual certified paramedic, but also sort of like a healer. And so she's trying to figure out what's wrong with Vern. And they do kind of, at first, they're kind of like standoffish with each other almost. Maybe suspicious of each other, but they kind of warm up and they eventually develop like an actual relationship. And Gogo does like help Vern through some hauntings, which is like a soft spot for me. Like, you know, that trope where the one is having like a nightmare or like a flashback and the other one is like there for them to help them through it. I did think that was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And like Gogo and Bridget are both really great with the twins, which Vern really falls for. But throughout part two, she's also kind of feeling herself missing the woods and missing being wild and like missing being part of nature. So, I mean, she spends a good amount of time either being in pain or just like wandering outside. And they're just basically trying to figure out what's wrong with Vern.
Yeah, that's another big part of part two, is just Vern being in pain and them trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah. And it you know, it's just getting worse. She's in more and more pain. And at some point, Gogo is able to take samples and send them out, and they find that whatever is happening with Vern is a fungus.
Yeah. And that like her temperature, her body temperature is just extremely high, and she should like be dead with that, but it's somehow like she's somehow living pretty okay with it.
Yeah, she does have a moment where basically it comes to a peak and she, you know, is bedridden and sleeps for like 10 days. And then after that, that's when they start kind of getting answers, because that's when they take the samples. Yeah. But yeah, she's like, she runs super hot. She has weird strength. At some point, she like hugs one of her kids super tight and like cracks a rib, and she feels horrible, of course. And like whatever, well, the fungus basically is like spreading and making like an exoskeleton down her back, which was very weird.
It was very weird, but I enjoyed reading about that. You read a lot about the exoskeleton in part three, and it definitely is where the book takes the sci-fi turn, I would say.
Yeah. So, and I don't remember where you kind of start to find this out. I think it's in part two where she sees Sherman.
Mm-hmm.
And she, so Sherman, the reverend, her husband, kind of shows up. And at first, Vern is, like, absolutely terrified. And then she realizes that he's dead and he died of cancer. And now he's speaking to her. And she kind of realizes that, like, everyone at Caneland was infected with this fungus. And as they, you know, if they died, they sort of become part of this like collective, and they're able to be summoned to talk to see them. And so she kind of determines at that point that the hauntings that she's seeing is those that have been infected and died. And she's seen Lucy a few times, so she concludes that Lucy is dead and she doesn't know how.
Right.
But yeah, basically they're just like hanging out at the cabin, reading. Vern's learning how to read. The boys, or not the boys, the children are learning to be children, and, you know, they're learning how to read, and the part two ends with a bunch of trucks, or a truck showing up at the cabin, basically, when Gogo and Bridget are not home.
Right, so that's when Vern decides to escape to a motel. so that the truck follows her and stays away from the twins. And that's when things really start to go down, I would say. I would say a large part of part three is just action, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of fighting. Do you remember the name of, it's one of the, like, original leaders of Caneland.
Oh, Queen.
Queen, that's it. Mm-hmm. So, she discovers that Ollie, who, you know, from part one, the fiend, has tracked her down again and has brought Queen with her, which Queen is, so Queen is still living. Caneland is very old, so Queen is very old, but she is, like, fully evolved into this exoskeleton, basically. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's, I think that's, isn't Queen the one that tells her about Caneland, like, the ascensions and all that stuff?
Yeah. So Queen is the creature that she saw before with, like, the wings and everything. Yeah, and so she kind of is able to explain some things. Like, she's somewhat coherent. However, not only is she super duper old and completely taken over by this fungus, but she's also been basically tortured by Ollie for however long. Ollie is pretty old, although we don't know how old, because of Queen or because of the fungus. They don't really get into that too much, but, you know, Ollie has been Queen's, like, owner for a long time, and so Queen is not all there, but she does explain some things and kind of teaches Vern that she can use the fungus to, like, control other people. Like, she can spread the spores, apparently.
Yeah.
that part was kind of like, what?
That was so weird.
And she can use them for mind control. I don't understand how, if you can do that, that it doesn't infect people, but apparently it doesn't. You can also kill people with it.
Well, okay, so I don't remember if this is actually in the book. Like, I don't know if I'm just making this up, but there was there was a whole thing about ascension. And I think once you have ascended, that's whenever the hauntings start. Is that correct?
The ascensions, I thought, were where they would drown people.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
So
I don't remember if they were connected or not, but basically what I remember about the ascensions is that they were, like, basically the ultimate punishment. Like, if you did something really bad, they would literally drown you until
you pass out.
You, like, passed out and were almost dead, and then, like, they would bring you back and you would, like, ascend into a new being and a new beginning.
Yeah. I remember it maybe being brought up again because the ascension thing is, like, explained in the first half of the book. And then it's not really brought back up. I think it's, like, maybe brought up when she's talking about Lucy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not sure.
And then, like, semi-large part of the third part, or I guess not large part, but, like, a good chunk of the third part, Vern, like, sees her mom's life. Mm-hmm. And, like, sees how she ended up at Caneland.
That was so, like, I welcomed it. Like, I was like, this is such a weird, like, abrupt change. Because this is whenever Vern, like, gets into Caneland. Like, she just finished, like, killing a lot of guards. And she's, like, she's trying to look for everybody in the cult in Caneland. And then it just, like, changes gears and shifts to why her mother joined the cult.
Right. Yeah, so Vern, like, hides at the hotel for a little while, and then she, like, has this run-in with Ollie and Queen actually, like, lets her get away, and then because they have this showdown, like, Vern ends up on the news, and so then they realize that, well, like, they're gonna kill, like, Ollie wants to kill everyone at Caneland, but they want Vern because Vern is, like, a perfect host for the fungus. Like, everyone who has the fungus gets, like, the hauntings and stuff, but not everybody, like, hulks out into this creature that Queen is and that Vern is becoming. And so they want to figure out why, and they also want to keep her to do their bidding. And so then they're all, you know, Vern and Gogo are, like, rushing to get to Caneland.
Her exoskeleton is absolutely crazy. It's like bulletproof. Mm-hmm.
Yes, she can like use her weird wing things to like shield herself.
Yeah. And she shielded Go-Go from bullets as well. Uh-huh.
I fail to understand how a fungus can make that happen.
I think it's more... yeah, because I feel like you'd need, what, like a metal to be bulletproof, right? And I was just thinking it's like bones. And bullets can go through bones, so...
But how can fungus make... Like, okay, if you've ever felt a mushroom, like, it's not very hard. I'm just, like, not... It's not quite computing for me, you know?
Right.
I feel like it's a little bit of a trend. Like, it used to be, you know, any monstrous mutation is a virus, and I feel like now it's going more towards a fungus, because fungi are more versatile.
Yeah.
Like... The Girl with All the Gifts. Have you read that or seen that movie?
I have not, no.
All right, well, I guess minor spoiler alert. It's a zombie movie. So, like, and the zombie-ism is caused by a fungus in that one. And that, too, I found it hard to understand why, like, how a fungus is capable of all of that. Maybe I just don't understand fungus as much as I could. I don't know. Anyway,
you know,
the whole exoskeleton thing was very weird.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just becoming more and more trendy nowadays, I feel, to have like this nature-esque sci-fi, which I really love. There's actually an author called Jeff Vandermeer who pretty much all his books have to deal with that. And like, if you enjoyed this book, you would probably love his other books. Like one of them, so he has the like the Southern Reach trilogy, which is about this like Area X, and if somebody enters it, they haven't really been able to find any or return any videos of this area, or like or just people aren't coming back, and if they do come back, they die, like they forget everything and then they die in a couple days. So like, as that area starts to get explained, it's mostly due to the mutations in the nature, and it's really interesting. So yeah, if you like this, you'll probably love Jeff Vandermeer just in general.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yes, her mother, her mother's life.
Yeah, so, yeah, her mother basically had, like, parents who were musicians and also drug addicts, you know, because that's always hand in hand.
Right.
And then they end up dying, and when she's young, she goes and stays with, like, an aunt and uncle, I think it was, who take her in, and they're very strict, but her mother, Ruth Ann, is, like, happy to have this strictness, and they expect the best from her, and she's happy to rise to that, and she's really close to them, and they send her to great schools, and she gets this great education, and then after they die, she ends up kind of regressing, and, like, she's out on her own, and she, you know, finds herself pregnant. She ends up having two kids, or maybe she's pregnant with Carmichael, Fern's brother, when she's brought to Caneland. But basically she's brought to Caneland because of Vern, because Vern is this like perfect carrier, and somehow they know that.
Well, and because she liked, because she liked that strictness, she really enjoyed that aspect of Caneland.
Yeah, so that's how Vern ended up there. And so they have this whole flashback while they arrive at the compound. I mean, because they don't spend much time at the compound at all. They kind of get there. There's a showdown. Go-Go ends up being injured. They shoot everybody.
Yeah.
Like, the entire compound.
And then Vern finds everyone dead.
Yep, Vern finds everyone dead. And then, is this the part that you didn't like?
Oh, yeah, this is the trope. So, one secret ability, because of course it is, of Vern's transformation is she can bring people back to life. And I was like, really? yeah,
so she uses her spores to heal Go-Go because Go-Go is shot, you know, and pretty gravely injured, and so she heals her. And then
I'm all for a healer. Okay. In any fantasy series, I think it's so smart to bring somebody that can heal people, but once they're dead, they're dead. You know, and I think I think the whole message of the book would have hit harder if everybody would have just stayed dead, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it didn't really go... the book ended before, like, pretty much anybody was brought back to consciousness, you know? Mm-hmm. But, like, it's kind of implied that she was able to resurrect pretty much everybody that died.
Yeah. I think she can't, like, it's kind of a mixture between her, like, spore powers and also because they're all connected with the fungus, but I did still think it was pretty far-fetched.
Yeah.
I agree about the healer thing. Like, I always say on those, like, you know, big epic adventure novels where they've got, like, an ensemble, they never bring a healer.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why, like, why you wouldn't do that. It seems very smart. They always have to get back to the home base to find a healer.
Right.
I'm like, why didn't you bring one with you? Anyway, so before the end of part three, we mentioned she finds out how Lucy died.
Yes.
Basically, Lucy had gotten away once, and then her mother tried to sue her father, who Lucy's father was very abusive. She tried to sue her father for custody. She ended up losing because Caneland has, like, hands in, like, all the local, like, judges and lawyers and all that stuff. And so he ends up getting her back, and then Lucy runs away again, and that's kind of what inspires Vern to finally get away. But Vern finds out through the, like, connection. She sees that Lucy never even got basically off the compound. Like, her father found her running and then was, like, beating her and accidentally killed her and buried her and then just
so
pretended
she's
like he never
somewhere
saw her. No one ever knew.
Rotting in the woods, basically.
Exactly. So, like, after you find out that Vern can resurrect people, they're kind of like, yeah, she's definitely, like,
she's gone.
Rotten.
Yeah.
Too far gone. And it's like, oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
It's got to be a fresh body.
I guess that can be my sad ending.
Yeah. So, anyway, and that's where it ends. Like, no, you know, no mention of what's going to happen next. It's just kind of like,
right.
Boom, over.
One of the big aspects to this book, it's even, I think it's in the blurb, is that it's kind of teased that she needs to take down the entire country. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. one of the last lines or something, but it's, like, so briefly mentioned. The way this, like, connects to U.S. history, basically, is whenever slavery was still around, they would do medical experiments on the slaves. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how the cult ties in with U.S. history. But I would say it's pretty far-fetched to say this really has much commentary on today's society, you know?
Yeah. It talks, you know, it hints at, like, segregation, because that's when the cult was founded, and, you know, hints at the Black Panthers a few times, like we said, and in some of Solomon's, like, rants and sermons, he mentions, you know, like, police brutality and mm-hmm. That kind of stuff, you know. And then they mention, like, they mention how wrong Americans have treated, like, Native Americans.
Yeah.
But you're right, they don't talk about modern stuff very much. I mean, because Vern's not really integrated into society at all.
Right.
She just knows what she's been told, and, you know, the cult very strategically doesn't talk about the outside world very much. So it has messages and allusions and that kind of thing.
I just felt that it was weird that it would be advertised like that, because mm-hmm. it had about as much nods to, like, current affairs as, like, a Stephen King book that gets published nowadays, but those aren't advertised as, like, political at all. So,
right.
I just want, if anybody was thinking of picking this up and expecting something super, like, strong messaged, you know, like, trying to break ground on something, it's not really there, you know.
Right.
The biggest thing, I think, is the medical experiments, which is interesting. Like, again, that's not really mentioned until the end, but it is mm-hmm. interesting to see how it tied into especially, like, Vern and her family.
Right. Yeah, they very briefly mention, like, a few you know, famous, really horrible experiments.
Yeah.
But literally by name, you know, if you didn't know them already, you wouldn't gain any information.
Exactly.
Basically.
Well,
so, yeah, that's the whole thing. I mean, overall, it was a really good book. Like Brendan mentioned, it was written beautifully. And it was a very interesting and unique story. I'm really glad that I read it. Yeah, for sure. The cover is very pretty.
That's something I've realized with that author. Their covers are very beautiful. Very blue. Really?
I've never seen any other novels by them.
I know they wrote, it came out maybe a year or two ago. It's called The Deep. I think it's a middle grade, like, mermaid story. But
I wonder if I have heard of that one. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, it was really, like, heavily advertised. At least in my book circle.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, and we decided what we're reading next, finally.
Yes. Do you want to introduce it? Because I do not even recall the title yet.
Yeah, so it is... excuse me. It is called A Lesson in Vengeance, and it is by Victoria Lee, yay, which is definitely their correct name. And it is very exciting. I went to go find it at Barnes & Noble today because none of the local bookstores had it, and my husband very rudely suggested that I ask for help, which I don't ask for help in Barnes & Noble, excuse me.
Right.
And he was like, well, what is it about? Like, maybe I can help you find it. And I was like, it's about a magical boarding school. He was like, oh, so it's Harry Potter.
Oh my God. I was like,
you stop it. No, it's not. The themes are very different, okay? But it is indeed about a magical boarding school.
So. Yes, but I mean, from what I know, it's being, you know, advertised as a queer, witchy, dark academia book, which makes me very excited for it.
Yes, very, very excited to get on board with that. Yes. Do you have any current reads?
Oh my God, I've read so much this month. Actually, I still think Sorrowland is the best book I've read.
Nice.
Let me just pull up my Goodreads. I'll just
yes, I love it.
Yeah, I'll just go real quick through them because there's too much. For some reason, I've actually been reading in August. Let's see. Okay. So last time I mentioned I was reading Boy Parts by Eliza Clark. Mm-hmm. It was really bad. So, aww. Yeah, I gave it 2 stars. It was, really bad. Nothing really happened, and it didn't even get weird. So, I don't know. Then I read 2 Stephen King books. I read The Mist, which was very entertaining, pretty short. And then Rage, which is... the book that he pulled off shelves. So it's about a school shooter. So after Columbine, he decided to pull it off shelves completely, but I found a copy of it at a used bookstore. So of course I got it. It was pretty good, actually. The ending, kind of explained to me why it was pulled off shelves because, you know, if you haven't read it yet, it's literally 150 pages, but he kind of makes the school shooter redeemable at the end. And everybody wants to be friends with the school shooter at the end. And so, yeah, it's just not a good message at all. Yeah. And the last book I read was All's Well by Mona Awad, which was going to be one of our podcast books. But let me tell you, after reading it, I don't think we'd have much to talk about with it. It just kind of made me confused. It's just about a drama teacher at a college who deals with chronic pain and is putting on a production of All's Well That Ends Well. And the trials and tribulations of that. and my current read right now is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh,
it's
nice.
So good.
Just the novelization of the movie?
Yes.
Or was it around...
So, after they made the movie, he may have written the book beforehand, I have no idea, but he expanded the story. And so, in the book, you know, I'm only 100 pages in, but everything I've read so far didn't happen in the movie. So, yeah, it's really good. He's a way better writer than I thought he would ever be, to be honest.
Nice. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
So I, as usual, did not read nearly as much as you did. I mean, I read Sorrowland. I read Horns by Joe Hill, which is a pen name. He's actually Stephen King's son. fun fact. It was so good. I read it in literally a day. I really enjoyed it. If you've ever seen the movie, don't judge the book by the movie. The movie was not nearly as good. Please read the book.
Did you watch the movie after the book?
Or before? I did.
Okay. Gotcha, gotcha.
Yeah, after. But yeah, the book was, I mean, as usual, way better.
Yeah.
which hurts me to say because Daniel Radcliffe was in the movie and he was pretty good, but no one else was. Yeah, I really enjoyed the book. It was very different, very like darkly funny. There was like a love story that was like very touching. But it's very, you know, like I said, darkly funny, gruesome, that kind of thing. Really fun. I'm still reading Addie LaRue.
Oh my God. Did you make much progress on it? Or?
I did. I've made some progress. It is a slog.
Really?
I don't know how much I'm enjoying it. Did you read it?
No, Victoria Schwab's not really for me. I've tried reading two of her books before, and she's a good writer. I just think a lot of her characters are flat.
Yeah, so this book has beautiful writing.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. You know, it's very, like, just soothing to read, I guess, but there's not much of a plot. Like, I'm literally probably getting close to halfway through the book, and there's still really no plot, honestly. I don't understand what we're working toward. Basically, Addie LaRue is somebody who was cursed. She is cursed to live forever and not be able to tell people her real name or her story. Every time she meets someone, as soon as she's out of their sight, they forget about her. And it literally feels like endless, like her life. Like, oh, I don't know what we're working towards. So anyway, I'm gonna finish it, but it is something else for sure. I picked up today, obviously, our next book, but I picked up Feral Creatures, which is the sequel to Hollow Kingdom.
Oh, it's a sequel.
Which is a...
Uh-huh. I thought it was just another book by that author.
No, it's a sequel to Hollow Kingdom, which we read in our little cute book club that we did one book with, and I'm so excited.
Yeah. I actually never finished Hollow Kingdom. I know. I need to.
You need to tell me
how the sequel is. If the sequel is really good, maybe I'll revisit Hollow Kingdom.
I will. I loved Hollow Kingdom so much. Like, absolutely 5 out of 5 stars.
See, I enjoyed it while I was reading it. It's just... I didn't think we'd ever actually talk about it. And I wasn't enjoying it enough to, like, be like, okay, let me read this so I can talk about it with my friends.
Aww.
I mean, at the end of the day, we never did talk about it, so.
We didn't. I mean, that might have something to do with you never finishing
right.
it, if we're being honest. But, yeah, loved it. I loved it. And the ending was so, I mean, sad, but good.
Well, if you like the sequel, let me know. Okay. Because of what I read of Hollow Kingdom, I think I read maybe 100 pages. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, it gets way better after that, too. You gotta try again.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say, we're going on an hour, so we won't...
Oh, yeah, we're gonna wrap it up.
You know, waste any more of your time.
We will talk to you guys in a few weeks. Thanks so much. Yeah.